running across the camp. I'll just remind you once again, you're listening to KUCI in Irvine, and hit a little theme music. Darkling Eclectica presents a collection of broadcast fiction brought to you by the Darkling Eclectica. Reputation by Michael H. Payne. Part 2. Rat kept his eyes focused this time, though, and managed to get off the midway without running into anyone else. Out along the craft wagons, he scrambled to the side of the meadow where the big calliopes sat, the windows on Master Thesperch's wagon shut, the curtains drawn. But Rat leaped up the stairs, pounded on the door, waited a second, then pounded again. A scattering of claws, a bolt thrown back, and the door flew open, Master Thesperch glaring out, a quill in his paw, candlelight glowing behind him. "What's the meaning of this?" Rat tried to form the words.
"Please, Master, to let Alphonse play."
He chomped his tongue.
"What?"
Master Thesperch's brow wrinkled up.
"Alphonse,"
he said around the pane.
"You not to
feh." The old squirrel shook the quill, ink spattering into Rat's face.
"I haven't got time for your nonsense."
He stepped back and started to close the door.
"No!"
Rat jumped, wedged himself between the door and the sill.
"Please, to listen, you little... Get out, get out!"
The door pushed against him, and without thinking, Rat pushed back, his shoulder braced against the jamb. The door hit Master Thesperch hard, the squirrel crying out and stumbling backwards into a table, his arm hitting the candles burning there. The candles toppled, fire leaping over the papers that covered the table. Master Thesperch kept falling, and the whole flaming mess crashed to the floor of the wagon, fire flying everywhere and illuminating the stacks and stacks of manuscripts as it dropped onto them. All that in an instant. Then Rat was jumping up, grabbing Master Thesperch, pushing the old squirrel out the door, and everything exploded, shoving Rat forward, the two of them tumbling down the wagon steps into the dirt. Cries of fire burst out immediately, but Rat's head was spinning too fast for him to tell where they were coming from. Then paws grabbed him, more voices shouting, the loudest being Master Thesperch howling,
"My compositions! He's destroyed my compositions!"
More jostling, more shouting, smoke in his eyes, in his nose, and it all flooded back. He had to escape, to get out like the last time, clawing and shrieking, knowing the fire would get him if he didn't run. He tried to twist away from whatever was holding him, tried to get out. Something bashed him in the side of the head, colors blossoming over his eyes, the shouts and the screams and the crackling all suddenly muffled and distant. And the next thing he knew, pain throbbing between his ears, he was lying on his side. A swallow, a blink, sitting up. Fire was the first thing he saw, the ash scent slapping his whiskers, his hackles rising. But the flames were shrinking, figures of squirrels resolving, buckets in their paws, tossing water over the wagon, smoke rising into the blue afternoon sky. His muscles relaxed, under control. They had it under control. And he tried to stand, to get up and help, but his legs felt weird, his front paws not moving from behind his back, something around his wrists and ankles tying them together. He looked down, saw the cords that bound his legs, coils obvious now when he tried to pull his arms apart. He pulled some more, another panic starting to build in his chest, his breath coming faster. He wouldn't be able to get away if the fire...
good.
A deep voice on his left, and Rat snapped his head up to see Officer Rennitz, the big squirrel wearing his blue camp patrol vest.
I won't have to carry you, then.
A knife flashed, and the cords around Rat's ankles parted. Rat blinked at the officer, his brain still numb, and the squirrel blew out a breath.
I always get the idiots,
he muttered. Then he squatted down, put a paw on Rat's shoulder, and said in slow, assured,
You need to stand up. You need to walk with me. Do you understand?
Another gust of smoke made Rat shiver, but he managed to nod, struggled, got himself upright, more squirrels rushing past with buckets for Master Thesperch's still-smoldering wagon. Officer Rennitz touched his shoulder again.
Now, stick close to me and we'll get you to court, okay?
Court?
Rat asked, but Officer Rennitz just gave him a gentle push away from the fire and toward the crowd gathered on the grass between the crafts booths and the calliopes, other squirrels in blue vests holding everyone at a distance.
Clear a path, folks,
Officer Rennitz called. The patrol squirrels looked over their shoulders, then took up the call.
Clear a path, folks, clear a path.
The glaring eyes of every squirrel made Rat look down, but he couldn't block out the muttering.
About time,
and
knew he was no good, and never been anything but a villain.
And Rat kept looking at the ground, Officer Rennitz guiding him from behind, until he heard the big squirrel say,
Watch your step, we're here.
He raised his eyes to see the circle of wagons at the center of the camp that held the magistrate's offices, King Hector's residence, and the patrol's HQ. Officer Rennitz guided Rat into the patrol wagon, through to a door on the other side, and Rat stumbled down the steps into the open air of the court, voices swirling around him from the squirrels crowding over the grass. At the defendant's mat in front of the magistrate's dais, Officer Rennitz stopped him, and Rat felt the ropes come loose around his arms. A door behind the dais opened, and three squirrels padded out. Magistrate Troyan, his red eye patch standing out against his dark fur. Magistrate Ishtik, big and impassive, as gray as the cloak she always wore. And Magistrate Chelik, the same frown on her face that Rat always saw from her.
Well,
Officer Rennitz said with a bow,
here he is.
Magistrate Chelik snorted.
This one's been nothing but trouble since the High Ones first cast him among us, and now he puts the Calliope Master in the infirmary, destroys his home, and burns reams of irreplaceable music.
She leveled a claw at him.
Just what have you got to say for yourself?
Rat blinked.
Forgiveness?
He said after a moment. Her eyes narrowed.
You don't fool me, always playing so dumb and innocent. I know what you...
Chessie, Magistrate Troyan interrupted. Can we do this by the book?
I agree.
Magistrate Ishtik leaned back against the wagon.
Rennitz, read the charges against the prisoner.
Prisoner?
Rat asked, but he didn't think anyone heard him because Magistrate Chelik gave another loud snort at the same time and waved a paw at him.
Everyone knows the charges. For 3 years this rat's been sneaking, stealing, lying, and lashing out whenever he's caught.
The crowd behind Rat murmured as the magistrate shouted,
He's a menace to this caravan and everyone in it!
Magistrate Troyan rolled his one eye.
Chessie...
Don't call me that!
Magistrate Chelik rounded on Magistrate Troyan.
I've told you, colleagues!
Magistrate Ishtik stomped the dais.
We sit in judgment on one of our own. We must...
But he's not!
Magistrate Chelik waved her paws at the larger squirrel.
He's an outsider, a stranger, a rat, creeping about in the dead of night. He was sent to us!
A voice shouted. Rat gave a cry of relief and turned to see Nona padding down the steps into the court, her gleaming white and gold priestess cloak around her shoulders, Alphonse right behind her. She moved down the aisle like a thunderhead, and Rat felt very glad her frown was fixed on the magistrates instead of on him. She stopped beside him and put a paw on his shoulder.
This child,
she said, her voice as hard as Rat had ever heard it,
was given to us by the High Ones themselves.
By Light Sleeper, perhaps?
Magistrate Chelik flicked her claws.
Sowing discords all this rat's ever done!
Rat could feel Nona tense up, and he could imagine the look on her face by the way the magistrate's ears all drew back.
You dare presume an understanding of...
Nona began, but a call from behind stopped her.
Announcing Hector Chelatet, our king!
Murmurs and shuffling, folks rising to their paws, and Rat turned to see King Hector, tall and thin and stepping lightly toward the dais in his purple vest. He nodded to Nona, mounted the steps, sat down beside Magistrate Troyan, and began speaking, his shurid so high-pitched and rapid. Rat caught only two phrases from his entire speech.
"Voices raised in seeming anger,"
and
"too joyous a day for court."
When he stopped, the magistrates jumped in, also speaking high shurid, so Rat could only make out a few words now and again. Ratayo, over and over, and a lot of talk about the fire. Magistrate Chelik seemed to be using the word arson, while the other two kept saying something that sounded like lightning strike. All Rat could think was that they meant a fire that wasn't started on purpose. Once the magistrates had all spoken, the king nodded, turned to Nona, and said,
"Priestess?"
Nona bowed and launched into the same chattering cadences, the flash in her eyes making Rat sure she was talking about the High Ones. Some folks even began giving responses, the whole thing starting to feel like one of Nona's services. But, Rat noticed, King Hector and the magistrates didn't join in. And when when Nona finished, some folks whooping the way they always did at the end of a ceremony, the king just nodded, turned to Rat, and said,
"Young Rat?"
Rat swallowed, bowed, and spread his paws.
"Forgiveness, Majesty, but everyone talks so high, I can hardly to hear."
A murmur of laughter from the gallery, and King Hector smiled.
"Of course,"
he said, his shurid now low and plain.
"Please, give us your version of this afternoon's events."
"Yes."
Rat gathered his words together.
"Master Thesperch, he not to let Alphonse play to open the festival, but because of my fault. I go to Master Thesperch, ask him please to let Alphonse play, but I..."
He bit his tongue, the pain making him pull his eyes shut, but he forced himself to say the word anyway.
"I stumble, Majesty, always I stumble."
He heard Magistrate Chelik snort.
"If you expect, please..."
King Hector said, and the magistrate stopped.
"Does anyone else wish to speak?"
the king asked then.
"Your Majesty,"
Alphonse's voice made Rat open his eyes.
"It's my fault if it's anyone's."
With a sigh, he rested a paw on Rat's shoulder.
"Earthmover entrusted the kit to me, but I'm just not much of a father."
His throat tight, Rat touched Alphonse's paw.
"You good father,"
he whispered, his mouth aching.
"I bad son."
Alphonse shook his head, King Hector speaking from the dais.
"All most unfortunate indeed."
He turned to the magistrates beside him.
"However, exile is not a punishment to be given lightly, and we must be certain..."
"Exile?"
Rat's fur crackled, the rest of King Hector's words lost to him. He looked up at Nona and Alphonse. Alphonse had his head bowed, Nona frowning at the squirrels on the dais. Then King Hector clapped, snapping Rat's attention back.
"The vote, then. Magistrate Ichtik?"
She spread her paws and bowed her head.
"Guilty, Your Majesty, of a child's carelessness, with a sentence of 1 month's duty as a plebe on the camp patrol."
King Hector nodded.
"Magistrate Chelik?"
"Guilty, Your Majesty."
The magistrate's eyes narrowed.
"Of attempted murder, arson, reckless endangerment, malicious intent, theft, perjury, and a callous disregard for the safety of this caravan. The appropriate sentence is exile."
Again, the king merely nodded.
"Magistrate Troyan?"
"Guilty, Your Majesty, of carelessness."
He winked his good eye at Rat.
"I served a few months as a plebe in my day, and I'd say I turned out all right."
Rat blinked at the magistrate.
"Turned out all right? They'd all just said he was guilty, hadn't they?"
A sigh made Rat look over, a tiny smile creasing Nona's snout, until...
"A moment."
Rat turned back, saw the king holding up a paw.
"Priestess, we've observed of late that you no longer take tea with our Calliope Master."
Nona's brow wrinkled.
"We've grown apart, Your Majesty."
King Hector tapped his claws.
"Since this rat kit has come among us, we believe?" I suppose, Your Majesty."
The tapping of the king's claws got louder.
"But does tradition not teach us that a caravan's spiritual health depends upon the cordial working relationship between its priestess and its Calliope Master?" So it is said, Your Majesty. That, then, is our first point.
The king turned to the two younger magistrates.
Claude, Francesca, you were affianced until recently, were you not?
Both magistrates' ears folded back, and it was Magistrate Troyan who spoke.
We were, Your Majesty.
The engagement, King Hector said. It was broken off after you two took opposite sides on whether this rat should be arrested for a series of small robberies our caravan has been experiencing. Or are we mistaken?
Magistrate Chelik's voice was softer than Rat had ever heard it.
You're not mistaken, Your Majesty.
King Hector nodded.
Our second point. The third is the Calliope Master removing our finest player from the opening ceremonies for this autumn festival. Yet another decision of importance, unduly influenced by this young rat.
Rat blinked at the king. Was he going to force Master Thesprich to let Alphonse play? But King Hector was shaking his head.
When acrimony enters our caravans, we who wear the crown are charged with finding its source and eliminating it, even though Shadow Bane herself should seek otherwise. And while this rat kit is certainly not the only cause of division among us, that he is one large cause we can no longer deny.
A quick breath from Nona.
Your Majesty, you can't, priestess, please.
King Hector raised his eyes and looked out over the folks Rat could hear breathing behind him.
Seldom do we who wear the crown exercise our magisterial vote, but when we do, our voice is considered that of two, and we declare this rat guilty of acts which warrant exile.
Nona stood perfectly still, Alphonse's eyes downcast, shurid words rattling the air. Exile, the only one Rat could hear. It couldn't mean what he thought it meant. Then King Hector was speaking again, and Rat forced himself to listen.
The vote is three for exile, two against. Let the record so show.
The king focused his dark eyes on Rat.
You will have until sundown to leave this caravan.
Leave, Majesty?
Rat struggled to speak.
But where? But why? I did not mean to...
Your Majesty!
A sudden voice from behind, a slight accent to its shurid.
And magistrates, your forgiveness.
Rat turned, saw everyone else looking at a mouse standing in the doorway of the patrol wagon, an old gray mouse, a round black hat between his ears.
I had merely come to bring Your Majesty the greetings of the Altersgate Town Council,
the mouse said in flowing shurid,
but I feel I must intrude upon these proceedings.
Doffing his hat, the mouse padded down the steps and moved past Rat to the base of the dais. King Hector smiled.
Counselor Nibbler. Your wisdom is always welcome here. Speak, by all means.
Thank you.
The mouse put his hat back on, turned to face the crowd, and Rat suddenly recognized him, the mouse he'd knocked over on the midway.
Some of you might recall that I was a fair tracker in my day.
He touched his snout.
I've learned to trust these whiskers of mine, and they're telling me this kit's no criminal.
The mouse looked straight at Rat then, his words now in the same smooth manx he'd spoken earlier.
So I'll ask you, lad, if you'd care to come live with me and my kin in Ottersgate.
Rat could only blink. Then an arm slid around his shoulders, and he looked up to see Alphonse smiling down.
Mice and rats,
he said, his manx awed and clipped after the mouse's fluid delivery.
They are closer cousins than squirrels and rats. An easier life it might be for you, yes?
Magistrate Chelik snorted, her shurid high and clicking in Rat's ears.
They want him, they can have him.
Chessie,
Magistrate Troyan rolled his eye. She glared at him.
You call me that again, magistrates, please.
King Hector stepped from the dais to stand beside the old mouse.
Counselor Nibbler, it eases our thoughts greatly to know that this young rat will be taken under your care.
The old mouse bowed to the king, turned, padded to where Rat still sat blinking, and bowed to Nona.
Priestess?
Nona inclined her head.
Counselor, the High Ones thank you.
Her voice broke, and she reached for the old mouse's paw, her voice a whisper in Manx.
Please, to watch out for him, Raymond. Ratayo, he comes from someplace else to change this place of ours, and he is precious as jewels.
Ah, Siobhan.
The old mouse stroked Nona's claws, his manx also soft.
Don't worry. There's more to this kit than meets the eye, or my whiskers are lying.
They not,
Nona said. She turned, rested a paw on Rat's head, and the shurid she chanted then, Rat couldn't begin to follow. But then she sighed and said in Manx,
Ratayo, the High Ones watch over you.
A tight smile pulled her whiskers.
They watch over you, or I grab them and shake them, yes?
Nona, I...
Rat's throat closed up, made him swallow before he could get out.
Love you, Nona. I not want to go.
She gathered him into a hug.
Be good. I to try.
He managed, but she was already letting him go, her shoulders hunched and making her robes look too big. Alphonse touched his arm.
I never forget you, Ratayo.
And a single shurid word.
Forgiveness?
Rat swallowed, grabbed the squirrel around the middle.
Always, Papa.
He got out.
Always.
Then the patrol squirrels were moving, forming solid walls of blue vests on either side of the walkway leading back to the patrol wagon. The old mouse held out a paw, and Rat tried to speak, but his throat and tongue were too tight and aching. All he could do was take the mouse's paw, follow him into the wagon and out the other side. They were down the midway, nearly out of the gypsy camp, before he couldn't hold it in anymore, his eyes brimming over. And while the paws that took him up weren't Alphonse's, weren't Nona's, weren't a squirrel's at all, at this point he was too miserable to care. He buried his face in the old mouse's shoulder and let himself cry at last.
In 1716, the last spring of her life, Darva Sparrow moved into a one-room hutch high up in the eastern side of the Bailey Oak, Otter's Gate and the woods like a kit's toy beneath her. She had no neighbors.
The swaying, even in the slightest of breezes,
she wrote in the opening of what was to become the final book of her journals,
proves far too great for those whose lives still have something to anchor them.
The isolation suited Darva.
I want no one new to mourn,
she wrote, mounting the silver bell.
All that is left me in this world.
At the end of the branch, she listened to it ring in the wind and waited for the blood jaguar to claim her. Other than Larry Robin, the clerk who delivered her meager order of groceries every weekend and who was destined to discover her body and her extraordinary journals, the only other soul she saw regularly began arriving shortly after the autumnal equinox. Lying awake one midnight, she heard three soft taps at her silver bell. She peered out into the darkness, saw the half-moon rising at the far forest's horizon, and silhouetted against it the unmistakable figure of a ratkit, turning and creeping away from the end of the branch. At first, Darva could only quiver with fear and rage.
Am I never to be quit of these foul creatures? Must the marauders who took my family, my soul, my very life in the distant swamps of their long ruined city pursue me even here?
But as these visits went on, the young rat slinking past her house every 2 weeks to tap on her bell to mark both the rising and the setting of the half moon at midnight, Darva came to see the touch of a curial hand in this. Her final entry, the careful swirls of black ink, only slightly shakier than those of her first, made nearly 8 decades previous, states,
Who this whelp is, how he managed to sneak into a town that would surely imprison him were he discovered, why he finds it needful to climb, rain, wind, sleet, snow, or hail, to my bell. What solace such a ritual could possibly bring to vermin such as him, I cannot begin to imagine. That the creature does it, though, speaks to me in my grief's quieter hours, reminds me that my fledglings were no older than this when their lives were taken by those who may be this rat's parents or grandparents, uncles or aunts. Did he see their final agonies? Does he come now with the kit's simple innocence to make what amends he can, to flail his tiny paw towards some sort of atonement? Can the curial powers truly find a flickering sense of decency within the heart of this still unformed monster and fan it into active life? Mostly, I fear, I find myself thinking not. But then he comes and taps my bell, and my sleep for days afterwards is somehow less haunted.
These words can only be seen as another example of Darva Sparrow's remarkably resilient spirit, especially knowing, as we all do, who this rat kit must have been.
From The Tumultuous Life of Darva Sparrow by Justin Cartingley Crowe, Beaverpool Press, 1727.
No!
Corin screamed, and Rat started back, the fork slipping from his claws to clatter against the muffin plate, or the gravy plate, or whatever that smallest plate was called. He blinked at the three mouse kits around the table, Kylie's ears partway down, Paul, with his eyes big and staring, Corin sneering,
6 months, Kylie, and your pet rat still can't tell the salad fork from the hot vegetable fork.
Corin,
Kylie sighed.
Well?
Corin waved a paw.
The recognition banquet's in 2 weeks. Your grandpa will stand this creature up. Everyone will laugh. Then they'll throw him out just like those squirrels did.
She gave a sniff.
Rats are nothing but pirates and thieves. My daddy and all my storybooks say so.
Rat couldn't stop a shiver, but he focused on Kylie, moving the fork he'd dropped, and the others. Why in Shadowbane's name did they need five? Back to their starting positions on his placemat.
Once more, Ratayo,
she said.
Pretend it's a game, like one of Grandpa's tracking problems.
That made Rat perk up. Other than creeping out at night, though he didn't climb up the giant oak tree at the center of town anymore, since the bell he'd been using to send Night's Eye his prayers had disappeared, Grandpa's lessons in the woods with Kylie were the only good things about the whole slow fall and winter Rat had spent here in Otter's Gate. But...
Well, how's this like a tracking game?
He asked. Kylie touched the fork nearest the big plate.
Well, say the salad fork is a beetle grub.
Paul gave a little laugh, and Corin gasped, her ears folding back.
Kylie, that's the grossest thing ever.
Oh, come on.
Rat had to grin.
I can show you grosser than that, easy.
This got a bigger laugh from Paul, but Corin stood, curled her tail over her left arm, and held her right paw out to Kylie.
Thank you, Ms. Nibbler, for a lovely afternoon's tea, but I'm afraid I'm getting a slight headache.
She marched to the parlor door.
Paul, come along.
But...
Paul blinked at her.
We haven't had cookies.
Corin's eyes narrowed.
If you think, Paul Chowder, that I'm going to be seen walking home without an escort...
Paul heaved a sigh and stood.
Thank you for the tea, Ms. Nibbler, Mr... Well, you're not a nibbler yet, are you, Ratayo?
Rat shrugged. Paul blinked some more, then bowed.
Well, thanks anyway.
He padded across the carpet to where Corin stood, tapping her claws on the striped wallpaper.
About time.
She looked back at Kylie.
We spinners don't normally wager, but if you can manage to get that rat adopted into Nibbler Clan, I will eat one of those beetle grubs. Raw!
Another sniff, and she moved out into the hallway, Paul at her tail. The front door creaked, and through the filmy curtains over the windows, Rat watched the two mice move down the garden path to the street. To see Corin's spinner eating a worm, he turned back to the table.
Now, which one's the grub again? The salad fork.
Kylie had rearranged her silverware into the starting position, too.
Now, since you're applying for adoption instead of being recognized, like the rest of us, your salad fork starts with its prongs against the plate, like a grub crawling up a tree root, see?
She went on, Rat forcing himself to pay attention, and pretty soon he started to see that it was like a game, each fork needing to be in its precise place at a precise time. Like everything else these mice did, Rat realized, and as Kylie raised the dessert fork and said,
"So, this one's a sugar moth."
Several things snapped into place in his head, like one of Nona's sand paintings finally coming into shape.
"Wait a minute."
Rat held up a claw.
"Last week, when Corin took extra cake at the Chowder's birthday party and said she deserved it 'cause her father's the head of Spinner Clan, that was a game too, wasn't it? Not anything real, just everybody following these weird rules so they can all play, right?"
The dessert fork froze in her paw, Kylie's brow wrinkled, but a laugh from the doorway made her look over. Rat turned too, saw Grandpa stepping into the parlor.
"Ratayo," the old mouse said, "you're wise beyond your years."
"Raymond,"
Aunt Asta stumped in, her voice sour. Kylie's father followed the other two mice.
"Sounds to me like Tayo's got a pretty good grasp of politics."
Aunt Asta's chin jutted out, an expression Grandpa always called her grumpy face, and shook a claw at Kylie's father.
"Politics is nothing to joke about, Boris."
She moved the claw to Grandpa.
"You'd do well to remember that too, Raymond."
"Now, Asta." Grandpa took her paw in his. Aunt Asta pulled away.
"And don't you try to sweet-talk me. When my mother was the nibbler, she..."
"Kofi was the finest clan head we nibblers have ever had," Grandpa said. He took Aunt Asta's paw again, his voice sliding into what Rat recognized as his extra soothing tones. "I've only ever tried to build on her legacy, you know that."
"Do I?"
Her eyes flickered over to Rat, her nose scrunching up like she smelled something bad.
"Some of your recent activities raise troubling questions, Raymond. Questions the families would like to have answered."
"Well, of course." Grandpa gestured to Kylie's father. "Boss, take Asta into the sitting room. I'll be right in." Aunt Asta moved to the door.
"We have a great deal to talk about this week, Raymond. Don't keep me waiting."
"Of course not, Asta." Grandpa waggled his claws until Kylie's father had followed her out. Then he puffed a breath.
"I so look forward to our little chats."
Rubbing his neck, he looked down at Rat.
"All part of the game, right, Retire?"
Rat nodded, but Kylie sighed.
"Grandpa..."
"Now, Kylie, don't you start on me, too." Grandpa gestured at the silverware. "And don't tell me you two have been inside all day doing this!" Looking gloomy just then was the easiest thing Rat had ever done.
"Corin Spinner and Paul Chowder were here, too, Grandpa. It was horrible."
Kylie shrugged.
"Well, you have to learn this, or..."
"Or nothing." Grandpa pulled the curtains open. "It's a beautiful afternoon, so close to spring, I don't care what the calendar says. I saw that Spinner brat and her gang heading out, so you go join them, you hear me?"
"Yes!"
Rat jumped up.
"If they're out in the woods, we can sneak up and hit them with mud balls."
Grandpa clapped a paw on his shoulder. "Now that's the sort of community-minded spirit I'm trying to inculcate in you youngsters." He turned toward the parlor door, his smile fading.
"Could use a couple of mud balls right now, actually, though I rather doubt Asta would receive them in the proper spirit."
One last smile, and he stepped from the room. Kylie sighed.
"Well, if we have to go out..."
Which was just her being poopy. Rat poked her shoulder, said,
"You're it, by the way,"
and scrambled into the hall.
"Hey!"
he heard her shout, but by then he'd thrown the front door open and jumped out into the afternoon, the not-quite-spring sunlight wonderful in his fur, fleecy streamers of clouds drifting through the blue overhead. Darkling Eclectica Presents has brought you part 2 of Rat's Reputation by Michael H. Payne. Narration and music were by Michael Payne. Darkling Eclectica Presents is a production of KUCI in Irvine.